Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
And I just want to tell you, for the five states, I am so honored. This was, to me, our biggest night. The winner of Pennsylvania, there's a moral obligation, at least on the first round, to support the person that won. Now, we didn't only win, we won big. It's over. As far as I'm concerned, it's over. These two guys cannot win.
If you are a Democrat, an independent, or a thoughtful Republican, you know their approach is not going to build an America where we increase opportunity or decrease inequality.
That's Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton speaking to supporters after yesterday's big wins for both of them. They are front runners. As of yesterday, they're both looking a little more like what they've been telling us all along they are. That is inevitable. Neither of them are there yet in terms of the strict delegate count, but they're getting closer, and closer last night by some pretty big jumps. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Wednesday afternoon, April the 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be getting our weekly update on the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway here in the first half hour of the program a little bit later. We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary. Pastor David Peterson of Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be our guest. And then we'll round things off today. Conversation with Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org about something he predicted some months back on this very program, a clash between the NCAA and colleges, especially the big ones, that still retain faith-based codes of conduct. He predicted it. USA Today has written about it. We'll talk about it in the last half hour of the program. Joining us for our weekly update on the November elections, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
Thank you.
All right, Mark. It was a big night for both of the front runners. Give us the rundown of last night.
Well, Trump captured nearly all of the delegates that were up for grabs in the five states in the Northeast that had primaries last night. I think it was at Rhode Island, where it was the only state where I think Kasich and Cruz picked up some delegates. But Hillary Clinton expanded her delegate lead by about 50 elected delegates in the primaries as well. In the Democratic side of things, there's been sort of a definite shift in tone, which is Sanders is finally starting to sort of acknowledge that, you know, he's probably not going to win things, whereas he'd been unrealistically optimistic up until this point. Now Sanders is, you know, intimating he might be open to a VP slot and trying to leverage his success in the primary as a second place finisher for the future. And as for Trump, it's still a little unclear, although, you know, again, Trump's on a knife edge here where he stands a possibility of getting the delegates needed to win in the first ballot of the convention and locking up the nomination. However, it's still not clear even that he can get the required number of delegates, even though after last night it appears that Ted Cruz has been mathematically eliminated from being able to get the required number of delegates so that he could win on the first ballot. So, you know, the broker convention is just scenario is still a very real possibility for Republicans.
Molly, that comes, of course, the mathematical elimination of Ted Cruz comes along with a story that's circulating, not exactly official yet, but sources saying that Cruz has announced Carly Fiorina as his choice for a running mate. What are your thoughts?
Well, first, I just want to make a comment about last night's primaries, which I think it's important to keep in mind that Trump was always expected to do really well in those states. And so the idea that that fundamentally changes the race, I think it doesn't really change. He did a little bit better than people were predicting he would do, but in a way that doesn't really matter much for the delegate count. And I also just think it's important to note that we are really late into the primary season, and people's votes are counting. Even in California, they will count, in Indiana, and all these. This is a time in the primary season when usually the the nomination is completely wrapped up, and it's totally apart from what you think about how it's going. It is kind of cool that people throughout the country are getting a say in who their nominee is. As for the announcement, which Ted Cruz announced that he was going to have a big announcement this afternoon, and a lot of people think it would be that he will choose Carly Fiorina as his running mate, I think he's looking for a boost headed into Indiana. He really does need to win Indiana, and he needed to do something dramatic to change the conversation. Picking Fiorina, who is a powerful candidate and someone who's really good on the stump, could be what he's looking for. And also, Trump's big problem, he does really well in getting media coverage, and he does all right with certain demographics. He does really horribly with women, even Republican women, even Republican married women, which is a demographic that almost always votes for the Republican nominee. I think I saw something about 70% of women have really unfavorable views of Donald Trump. So he's doing very poorly, and there's no way he can win a general nomination with numbers like that, not even close. It's really unheard of levels of dislike for a candidate. So I think Ted Cruz is understanding that, and he has been emphasizing and defending his wife, who was attacked by Donald Trump. And he's if he's picking Carly Fiorina as his running mate, that further sends a message about females who are valued as opposed to who are mocked or disdained for their looks, which is what you're getting a lot of from the less civil campaign that he's running against.
And if it is for, you know, to bolster and to get a boost going into Indiana, Mark, that matters, because earlier there was an announced Cruz-Kasich alliance, for which, at least in Cruz's case, Indiana becomes very important. Talk about it, if you would.
Yeah, well, finally at this point they realized that having a three-way race against Trump as a presumptive frontrunner wasn't doing either Kasich or Cruz any good. So they, you know, at this point in time, so they decided, there was sort of a pact that they put out there that Cruz would pull out of certain states and I think Oregon and some others, then cede those delegates to Kasich, and Kasich would pull out of Indiana and some other places and hopefully cede his delegates to Cruz, so that they could both work together to effectively stop Trump. However, you know, within 24 hours of them announcing this pact, there was, you know, a lot of tension about, you know, how serious this was. Kasich had said some things like, well, you know, he wouldn't tell anybody who to vote for, you know, and it just didn't come across as being that these two men were necessarily completely committed to this. And, you know, to some extent, also, it's kind of amazing that this is happening this late in the game. I mean, Kasich did a lot of damage to Cruz along the way by remaining in the race. I mean, there were a number of very close primaries where, you know, if Kasich had, you know, even ceded a small portion of the votes that he hoovered up, then it might have put Cruz over the top in several primaries, and we'd be looking at a very different race in terms of,
well,
you know, the total delegates.
Even last night, I mean, Kasich's whole reason for being in the race was supposedly that he could take votes away from Donald Trump in the Northeast. And if that's your whole reason for running, is that you think you can do well, and he did really poorly, it's very confusing why he continues without doing better in these races.
There's a lot about Kasich's campaign that has been, from the outside, looked rather strange. I mean, there was a report, I think, in the last week that Kasich was vetting VP candidates. I mean, it does seem really delusional and baffling from the outset, a lot of what Kasich is doing, for sure.
Can you talk a little bit, Molly, about the inside the Trump camp? This is kind of intra-campaign politics. There was noise that he was going to move to a more presidential tenor, that he was going to start doing things like even reading from teleprompters and letting people write speeches for him. And then that kind of crumbled up, didn't it?
Yeah, so Trump had a problem in that the guy who really helped him get this far into the race, this guy Corey Lewandowski, had become a bit of a liability. He was beating up protesters or manhandling protesters, and had gotten a scuffle with the reporter, and he also just was very intemperate. And people thought that it was just ridiculous that that he didn't have more of a campaign organization. I mean, he has no way of even thinking about how to get delegates. It's kind of all happened through the strength of free media, which is great, and they've done very well with that, but that's not how you win an actual presidential campaign. So now that it's seeming that he's doing better, people are expecting more of him, and he hired this guy, Paul Manafort, who, like many other advisors to Trump, has done a lot of work in Russia. And Manafort started getting the word out that Trump was going to begin acting more presidential in a bid to get some votes from people who aren't already with him. So again, we're thinking of Republicans and independents and women and whatnot, people who have thus far not gotten on the Trump Express. And that message excited a lot of people in the media. And then Trump seemed to be very upset by that, though. He didn't like that Manafort had gotten this word out. And he sort of rejected this idea that he needs to act a different way in order to secure the nomination or win the general. And so he, word on the street is that he put Lewandowski back into a position of authority and kind of sidelined this other guy, Manafort. So I'm of mixed feelings about this. Definitely the inside the beltway thinking is that he should have been trying to act more presidential and dropped the childish insults and all that that has been a trademark of his campaign thus far. But I kind of see the logic in opposing it. I mean, the whole way he's been successful, even if he's losing in every head-to-head matchup with Hillary in quite dramatic fashion, is that he has run this very unconventional campaign, and he has not read from teleprompters, and he does say things that are outlandish, and he gets the free media coverage and whatnot. So I think there is a certain logic to him keeping with what has done well for him. I am curious if he will come up with a different plan for getting voters who are thus far quite resistant to him.
Mr. Trump, please be specific. Tell us your views on LGBT, how you plan to be inclusive as president. Speak about North Carolina bathroom law in particular.
Oh, I had a feeling that question was going to come up, I will tell you. Well, look, North Carolina did something that was very strong, and they're paying a big price, and there's a lot of problems. And I heard one of the best answers I heard was from a commentator yesterday saying, leave it the way it is right now. There have been not very few problems. Leave it the way it is. North Carolina, what they're going through with all of the business that's leaving and all of the strife, and that's on both sides. You leave it the way it is. There have been very few complaints the way it is. People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble. And the problem with what happened in North Carolina is the strife and the economic punishment that they're taking. So I would say that's probably the best.
Do you have any transgender people working in your organization?
I don't know.
No?
I really don't know. I probably do. I really don't know.
So if Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses?
That is correct.
Okay.
Different issue, also a social issue.
You know, there's a big move to create new bathrooms. Problem with that is for transgender. That would be first of all, I think that would be discriminatory in a certain way. It would be unbelievably expensive for businesses and for the country. Leave it the way it is.
Let me ask, I know there's a huge issue in North Carolina, and it's a so-called bathroom law. And a lot of people have made, I don't know how many people this actually impacts. My guess, it's a very small number, but it's become controversial. And Ted Cruz tried to attack you on this today. And so I wanted to give you a chance to explain your position on that as it relates to transgenders picking which bathroom they want to go to. I can't even believe I'm asking the question, but I'm asking.
Well, it is a small number, but we have to take care of everybody, frankly. And North Carolina, which is a great place, which I won, by the way. I love North Carolina. And they have a law, and it's a law that, you know, unfortunately is causing them some problems. And I fully understand if they want to go through, but they are losing business and they are having a lot of people come out against. With me, I look at it differently. A community, whether it's North Carolina or local communities, really, they should be involved. We have so many big issues to be thinking about, Sean. We have ISIS to worry about. We have bringing trade back. We have rebuilding our military. But I think this, I think that local communities and states should make the decision. And I feel very strongly about that. The federal government should not be involved.
That's Donald Trump speaking first on NBC's Today Show and then on Fox News with Sean Hannity. Mark, did Trump change his position on transgendered bathrooms there?
I mean, Trump, I give him a lot of credit because he's sort of good at, one, actually flip-flopping. I mean, there was a point earlier this year where he held three different positions on immigration in the same day. It's not uncommon for them to issue press releases immediately following debates, you know, walking back things that Trump said from the debate stage. I don't even know what to say. You know, did he change his position? I mean, you know, sure, the rhetoric sounds a lot different from one to the next, but, you know, you never know what his core opinion is.
I would argue that he was consistent in his cowardice. He was not strong enough to be able to resist the sort of media's talking points, completely inaccurate descriptions of what's going on with the bill, or ability to stand up and say, actually, boys and girls are different, and one of the social norms we've had for thousands of years is protecting women by creating sex-specific spaces. And he, you know, didn't know the issue in either case. He actually said false things in both of his statements. So there was a consistency, but not a consistency that you can be proud of. It was a very politically correct consistency.
Molly, is it any wonder, and this is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, that conservative religious voters are, the word they use is perplexed by the 2016 presidential campaign.
What a charitable word to use. Yes, it is perplexing in that, it's a very difficult thing where religious conservatives are seeing that they are very different from everybody else in the country. So even if you see that evangelicals might support Donald Trump, one of the consistent things we've seen is that if you go to church weekly, you're much more likely to be a Trump opponent. And all the issues that social conservatives care about, they usually believe that the way to limit government is by having strong families and institutions and individual rights. And Trump is not someone who agrees with those positions. So he's consistent in what he cares about, which seems to be trade. And I think trade is sort of his foreign policy. That's what he thinks of foreign policy as, is having a strong trade, by which he means negotiating against the free market and certain deals and whatnot. But he's really bad on religious liberty. He's bad on believing that men and women are different or that sexual distinctions matter in any way. He's bad at understanding. I mean, just for instance, I want to say about this trans bathroom issue and locker room issue. What the state was doing was letting businesses actually make their own decisions about how to handle restrooms for different people, and it was to go against a Charlotte ordinance that did not let businesses make their own decisions. So Trump was inaccurate when he was talking about that, but he's inaccurate in a way that is in the direction of a larger government role in the lives of people and businesses and institutions. So yes, it's very difficult to be a limited government, constitutionalist, social conservative type in this campaign because we have the presumptive nominees being two of the most odious people you can imagine for such a small government perspective.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist, along with her husband Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. When we come back, we're going to talk about, well, just in terms of raw votes in this primary season, there's a record about to be broken by Donald Trump. And we'll also talk about Hillary Clinton having been moved left by Bernie Sanders. What happens as Bernie Sanders is less and less a factor in her campaign for the presidency? We'll be right back.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting an update on the November elections. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard, Molly Hemingway of the Federalist are our guests. Mark, I'm curious about something I read in Politico this morning. It has to do with just kind of the raw vote count so far in the Republican primary. And they are reporting that Donald Trump, just in terms of the raw votes that are cast, not delegates, is fixed to break George W. Bush's record of, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 million total, and shoot past it significantly. What does that say?
Well, a lot of people point to that and say, well, that it shows that there's increasing levels of voter engagement, but and that's a good thing for Republicans, although I'm not really convinced about that. I, as a general rule, I think that people tend to vote more when they see that there is more at stake or they're more concerned about their future. And how that necessarily, you know, translates into November, I don't really know. I mean, other than it says that there's a lot of uncertainty about their out there economically, politically, national security. I mean, I think people are really concerned and they want to have some say in the process. Now, on the Democratic side, you haven't quite seen that voter engagement, but at the same time, their primary has been a lot less competitive. Hillary Clinton's been the presumptive front runner from day one, and I just don't think that people feel the need to get out there in the primary, in the Democratic primary, the way that they do in the Republican primary in order to determine who the winner is going to be. But, you know, what that says for, you know, who turns out in November, it's very, very hard to tell. I mean, a lot of people want to say that Trump is going to, you know, scramble the electoral coalition, but, I mean, the reality is that the last, you know, two election cycles, Democrats have done an extraordinarily good job of turning out the vote. So I think it's far too early to say that bigger voter engagement on the Republican side is a good sign for them.
I would like to make a point about that, which is that one of the most disconcerting things about the Trump campaign was how they handled their losses in states like Colorado. They had no ground game in Colorado, and they picked up no delegates in Colorado. If you're going to actually win a general election, generally speaking, you actually have to have a really good ground game. This is where Barack Obama just completely trounced Republicans who even were working and thinking about it. And Donald Trump has shown no evidence that he even thinks he needs to have a ground game, an actual field operation where you are working to identify voters who will vote for you and make sure they get out to vote or make sure they're doing their early voting and whatnot. He doesn't seem to think that that's important. And in fact, he is spoken about such things as if it's a rigging of the system or cheating and unfair and all this kind of stuff. If he is to win a general election, and the polls currently show him losing states that Republicans tend to win, he needs to not just win states that Republicans tend to win. He needs to pick up a bunch of other states that Republicans tend to lose. And the only way you do that is by having a lot of time and energy and devotion spent to actually getting voters to the polls. Already the people who are excited by nothing more than the constant media coverage, they're already excited for him. What about the rest of the people who don't respond so easily to such media coverage? That's very disconcerting about Trump's prospects in the general.
It's been noted, Mark, that Hillary Clinton has kind of got off her game in the sense that she was planning on running unopposed, essentially. Here comes Bernie Sanders, and significantly pushes her to the left, kind of challenging her on a weekly basis with more leftist policies, and she would kind of approach him that way. How does she tack back post-nomination?
Yeah, that is a really good question. Because this is definitely going to be a problem for her. I mean, this is what I call the Mitt Romney problem, which is that Mitt Romney went so far right on some issues in the primary that he tried to tack back to the center, but by then he'd sort of damaged his credibility and kind of looked like a flip-flopper on certain issues. And there are a lot of issues here where Hillary Clinton has gone way far to the left than she ever previously had as a politician and a public figure because of Bernie Sanders. I mean, she came out basically rabidly against guns because Bernie Sanders, despite being this, you know, progressive, you know, socialist, Vermont, his constituents in Vermont do like their guns, and he had a pretty good track record in terms of defending gun rights. So Hillary Clinton decided that the one way that she'd go after Sanders was to go way to the left on guns and court the Democratic base that way. Well, you know, when you're going into a general election, you have these swing states like Colorado and New Mexico and New Hampshire, where, you know, actually even the Democrats tend to be pro-gun, so she's going to have to find a way to navigate back to the center on that issue without it hurting her. And the same is true of a lot of other issues. I think the minimum wage, you know, the business community, the Chamber of Commerce types are going to be really unhappy with her, you know, being so vociferous in support of minimum wage hikes. And trade is another issue where she got pushed way far to the left. Again, you know, she was actually involved in brokering this TPP trade deal that progressives decided that they didn't want, you know, and even though she said it was a great, you know, idea multiple times in the Obama administration, she ended up coming out against it. I just think at some point, you know, this is going to be an issue in any sort of general campaign. You know, her, you know, sincerity and flip-flops are going to be an issue. However, it may not be as much of an issue if, you know, she's running against Trump, who's got his own problems with flip-flopping.
Well, not just that if she's running against Trump, who has his own problems with flip-flopping, but think about what he said earlier today about Bernie Sanders. He specifically said that he was going to pick up Bernie Sanders' positions when he runs against Hillary Clinton because Sanders has a lot of good ideas. That means he'll be hitting Hillary Clinton from the left, so this problem that you're just talking about actually won't be a problem because she won't need to, she'll be protected by Trump actually hitting her from the left on some of these issues, these wage and trade issues that she had to go left on. It's a very bad it's a very bad campaign if you are an economic conservative or a social conservative.
Which group is bigger, likely public Republican voters who are part of the Never Trump movement? They're not going to vote for Donald Trump. Or Trump supporters who won't vote for any other GOP nominee other than Trump? Which is bigger in the GOP?
That is a really good question. I would love to see some polling on that, but I don't have any clear picture on that. However, I mean, regardless of what you want to say about who emerges from this primary, you know, whoever the Republican frontrunner eventually is going to have a problem where he's going to have to find a faction of people that he needs to bring back into the fold, and that is not a good place to be for anybody. I mean, I don't envy Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or whoever it is trying to piece back a Republican coalition after what's sure to be a somewhat testy convention.
Molly, same question for you. Which group is bigger among likely Republican voters, those who are part of the Never Trump movement, wouldn't vote for Donald Trump, or Trump supporters who won't vote for any other GOP nominee other than Donald Trump?
I don't know, although I think the Never Trump contingent is large, and it'll be curious to see how they play out their opposition to Trump. I think you'll see a lot of depressed voter turnout, people who, you know, they can't vote for Hillary on account of what type of a candidate she is and what her policies are, but neither can they defend a vote for Trump. Maybe Trump will act more presidential. Maybe he will pick someone for vice president who's not such a liberal, and maybe that will help these Never Trump people get on board with a Trump candidacy. But I think probably both groups are overstating their inability to be brought back on board the Republican ticket. And you're already seeing people on both sides kind of rationalize a change of heart.
Folks, you can read Molly and Mark Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary. We're going to be in John chapter 16, your sorrow will turn to joy, and Jesus saying, I have overcome the world. What does he mean by overcoming the world? Pastor David Peterson of Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be our guest. Stay tuned.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people, by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $100 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship. Or you can make your $100 check payable to Issues Etc. Write Scholarship in the memo line and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can support the boys' basketball program at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, by entering a team into our annual Golf Scramble fundraiser. It's Saturday, May 28th at Oakbrook Golf Course in Edwardsville. Hi, this is Anthony Smith, head boys' basketball coach at Metro East Lutheran High School. Join me and fellow Knights for a Golf Scramble, May 28th at Oakbrook Golf Course. For more information, send me an email, anthony.smith@melhs.org. Thanks for your support.
What would you say if someone asked you to explain the Trinity? Would you begin with Scripture, the creeds, or some clever analogy? And how are Christ and the gospel at the center of this fundamental Christian teaching? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Beckwith has written a new book in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic series. It's titled The Holy Trinity. You can save $5 by pre-ordering The Holy Trinity at logia.org, L-O-G-I-A.org.